What is up, everyone? It's Josh Trent. You've made it back to Wellness and Wisdom, the place, the podcast where we gather, apply, and embody the wellness and the wisdom to nourish all five sides of ourself, right? This is the mental, the physical, the emotional, spiritual, and financial that we all signed up to master here on planet Earth. This is AMA 627, The Power of Language, How Men Can Create Long-Lasting Intimacy, and How to Heal from Divorce to Start Anew. As always, I'm here with Mar, out in the middle of the ocean in Azores, just living her best life, our content manager and the co-host of this AMA. Mar, how are you doing today?
How am I doing? I've been actually thinking about it lately. There's just the question, how are you? How are you doing? It just like puts so much pressure on me sometimes because I don't want to fall into saying, I'm fine, and how are you? And just like leave it like that.
Yeah.
But like, how do I actually express how am I doing? Because like every moment changes so fast and everything just like flows so naturally. I'm like, yeah, in one moment I'm so happy, in the second I'm like crying, and then I'm laughing. And it's like, how do I express how I'm doing in just like a short sentence? So that's where I'm at. Kind of ditched the question a little bit, but yeah. Wanted to mention that too.
You're deep. That's why. You're a deep thinker and a deep feeler. And this is actually really important for us because I feel the same thing you feel. And y'all can relate to this. Have you ever been in the grocery store and you're checking out and there's maybe like a 21-year-old or a 22-year-old across from you, and she'll say, hi, how are you? And you know she said it 12,000 times that day. This is the best way to address exactly what you're talking about. And I have found this. Use that moment for real connection and pattern interruption, which we're going to talk about language today. So why not get into language right now before we tell you guys about the amazing program that we're launching, the Liberated Life Tribe, and also all the discounts in our store page, y'all. So make sure that you subscribe right now. It's a huge, huge wave of energy that we've all been feeling in 2024. And Mara, your question, your statement totally hit it on the head for me, because I've been in a grocery store and this poor person, they don't deserve my empathy or my sympathy. They deserve my respect. They deserve my reverence because I've been there. I know what it's like to be in a position where they're just doing all they can to make ends meet. And so when they say to us in the grocery store, hi, how are you? I usually take a deep breath and I'll be like, I am doing great. I love your button. I love your jacket. I'll find something that's authentic that I actually like about them. And I'll just talk to them and connect with them as a human being. And I'll see their face perk up. I'll see their micro muscles in their face change. And I've taken what would have been a mundane, boring, inauthentic moment of me saying back, fine, how are you? Which is so triggering for me. I'm like, ugh. Hi, how are you? Fine, how are you? It's the worst. It's the absolute worst. It's totally inauthentic. So take something inauthentic and flip the script. Make it authentic. I feel you, Mar. I know everybody else feels you too on that. And look, this is the part about our emotional intelligence. You know, I talked about earlier the Wellness Pentagon, the five sides of us, emotional being one of them. Emotional intelligence is our ability to regulate, to breathe, to be present, and to give and receive information, right? That's essentially all the faculty of our emotions do. They sense, they feel, and they communicate. So in this paradigm of what is emotional intelligence and how do we live this liberation for ourselves, we do it by being vulnerable and by actually going first. We're going to have a guest on the podcast. Her name is Gervaise Kolmos, and she has this way of being that she teaches her women as a life coach across the world. And she says, you know what? I just go first. I go first. I love first. I open my heart first. I make the conversation happen first. Because to quote Mark Groves, my friend, no one ever won or lost a war by opening their heart first. There's no score when it comes to love and connection. There's no freaking template of like, this is exactly what you do to be safe. The whole thing, whether it's these micro conversations in the grocery store or whether it's macro conversations of like, should I be with someone? Do I love someone? How do I communicate that I love someone? It's all the same thing. It all takes us to be vulnerable. And I think from that vulnerability, we have liberation. So if y'all haven't signed up yet, make sure you join the wait list. We're launching our Liberated Life community, our tribe, where we can actually connect with one another and move the needle forward. Go to liberatedlife.me and make sure you put your name, your email, so I can communicate with you as soon as this launches on my birthday, April 29th. All right. Also, this is really important. You can save so much money on stuff you're already buying, right? So this is the part where the show is always going to be free and you can save money. You can support the show. I don't care if it's like the foods you eat or EMF mitigation or anything at all that you're already purchasing. Head over to joshtrent.com/store. Save yourself some money. Support the show. I cut out the middleman. I negotiated the best deals. So buy the stuff you're already buying, just a lot cheaper, and make yourself really well. All right, Mara, let's get into this AMA today. Question number one is from my homie who I've done training with, my friend, Ian Vogel. Let's tune in to what Ian has to say. Now, Mar, you and I picked this question because don't we, you and I practice language together all the time, most empowering language?
Every single day, yes.
Before you had heard about this concept of language and like using conscious language, had it ever come into your awareness the way that we use it with each other?
Sometimes, but more not in a sense like paying attention to every single word, but more like how I talk to myself in my head, especially. So like taking myself down and just like calling myself names when I do something wrong and just like these little details. But I haven't thought about it before in relation to other people and like how I actually express myself. So it was more about the inner talk.
Yeah. Inner dialogue is definitely where outer dialogue comes from. That is for sure, which we're going to talk about in the critical factor today from Ian's question. So let's listen to what Ian has to say.
Josh Trent, my man, I hope you're doing well. As always, I love the content you're putting out. My question for you revolves around language. Are there any words that you intentionally don't use because you find that they can impede your ability to communicate with somebody? For example, the first thing that pops into my head is the word shaman. I intentionally don't use that word because it seems to have a different meaning for everybody. And I find that using that word just muddies the water. So I'm curious, are there any words or maybe speech patterns that you intentionally don't use because they get in the way? And if there are, how would do you determine, or what's your criteria for determining whether a word is actually useful or not, or if you should banish it? And maybe a quick follow-up question, are there any words that you have banished from your dictionary or lexicon intentionally? I'd love to know.
So good. So good. Look at the word etymology, right? The word etymology is the study of the origin of words and the way in which that meaning has changed throughout history. I mean, that should be everything we need to know about why language is malleable. And language literally is a spell. So there's a practical scientific explanation for this, and then there's also a more grounded spiritual way to experience this. You know, I'll throw it to you, Mar. So you had said inner dialogue is something that you have been focusing on since we've been working together. And it's been something that I've been aware of since 2008, 2009. Am I perfect at practicing it? No. Do I do my best? Yes. But the one thing for me, and I'm curious how you feel before I go into the both spiritual and scientific definition for Ian, is this. Don't you believe that in communication, whoever uses language and then corrects themselves on the language they used is vulnerable, is authentic, and truly has the most power because there's nothing to hide. There's peacefulness in the way they communicate. Because, for example, I might say something to you like, Mar, I have to finish this report, or I have to finish this recording. And then I could say, you know what? I'm sorry about that, Mar. I get to do this because it's aligned with my values. Don't you find that practice to be paradoxically challenging yet rewarding at the same time?
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's also a part of the process, like the natural evolution of the process. Like, of course, you're not going to do it all perfectly the first day. It's like there's going to be a stage where you're going to go back to the old pattern and you're going to make, as we don't like to say, mistakes, but you're going you're going to say the thing that you're used to saying, right? And so correcting yourself is just the natural part of the process.
Yeah, agreed so much. All right. So the big thing that we get to focus on here, and notice I used get to. Now, Ian, we went through training with Scott Jackson, right? And we just came out with an incredible, heartwarming, heart melting, heart expanding episode with Scott. That's at joshtrent.com/622. And also, the previous episode, joshtrent.com/481. Now, in both of these, you will notice Scott uses very specific language. And as you know, Ian, and for all of us, there's only, I think, a handful, like less than 30, couple handfuls, less than 30 master NLP trainers in North America. Scott was one of them. So his life for multiple decades has been based on the conscious use of language. I also can remember conscious communications with Mary Shores, where we went deep into the science and the spirituality of language. To go back to what I said earlier, things are spells that we say. When I speak something out into existence, that's actually what I'm doing. And on a spiritual level, let's go into the spiritual first, Ian. So the very first thing that comes to mind for me here is I have to or I get to. I need to or I get to. These are the big ones. Okay, so really feel this. When I say I have to do something, there's a compression to it, right? There's an energy to that word of like, oh, I have to do this. And it makes me feel not good. It makes me feel compressed. It makes me feel at times depressed or stressed. Like I have to do this. I have to fill out this taxes. I've been doing a lot of taxes lately, right? So think of it like this. In that moment, can you give yourself grace to be conscious enough to say, oh, you know what? I actually don't have to do this at all. Because that's the real truth. The total flip the script on this is we actually don't have to do a damn thing, right? We don't have to breathe. Of course, at some point, our body would make us. We don't have to make love, but if we don't, a part of us would die. We don't have to eat food, but if we don't, we would die eventually. So there's always a cause and effect, right? It's one of the 11 universal laws, cause and effect. So with cause and effect still has the agency of choice. And I think this is what most people forget, and I forget it too, because I'm a human and I'm not floating wearing a white cape. And anybody that tells you they are, run as fast as you can from that person. Because I don't care how evolved you are spiritually or emotionally, if you have an emotional IQ of 99 out of 100, you are still going to have learning lessons, right? And learning lessons appear when the ego, the mind, is trying to protect itself. The mind tries to protect itself because it doesn't like to change and it doesn't like to feel stuck and it doesn't like to feel anything crunchy. And so rather than expand yourself and be vulnerable in a moment and say, you know what, Mar, actually, it's not that I have to do this. I get to do this because I know that this document or I know that this thing is in alignment with my highest values. I know that my values hierarchy is aligned to this thing that I'm telling myself I have to do, but I actually don't have to do shit. None of us have to do anything. And this is the concept I want to bring today is like, we don't have to do a thing. We get to do things. Now, at first audible, or the first time you experience this switch of language, this mindset, because that's really what it is, you're going to meet massive resistance. And I still meet resistance to it now. The resistance is going to come up. Your mind, you're going to watch your mind tell you, it's stupid to talk like that. It's silly to talk like that. But guess what? That's the part of your mind that keeps you stuck anyways. That's the part of your mind that doesn't allow you to open your heart, that doesn't allow you to speak authentically, and that keeps you stuck and completely disempowered, gathering evidence that you're disempowered. So if you want to be liberated, because that's the path we're all on, we're on a path of personal liberation. If you want to be liberated, that's the first place I would start, Ian and all of us, is take out the word I have to. The etymology of have is so interesting because if you look at it, it's a clutching, it's a bringing towards, I have to. Well, what about I get to? The energy of that is, oh, it's expansive. I get to do something. So it's a small switch with a massive impact that casts a huge spell of possibility in life because look, you have agency of choice. Any situation in language where you remove your agency of choice through the use of the word have is really a disempowering act. Now, it's not shame or blame because I do it sometimes. Oh, Mara, I have to do this meeting or I have to do this thing. But that's the first place I would start. Second, I already touched on it. It's this, oh, I made a mistake or, oh my God, I fucked up or this shame and blame that happens from the word, oh, I made a mistake. Think about what that is. It's a missed stake, right? For all the carnivores out there, you love that. But really what it is, it's a missed opportunity. Hey, you know what? I missed that opportunity and now I'm just going to turn it into a learning lesson. So that's the second piece, Ian and all of us, is take out the have to and replace it with get to. Take out the word mistake and just be like, okay, it's a missed opportunity and it's also a learning lesson. Learning lesson is not only is it an alliteration, that the unconscious mind loves, and we learned about alliterations, Ian, in our training. Alliterations are when two words have a rhyme or a connection through the audio spoken language of the rhyme. So learning lessons a big one too, because when I learn something, it's actually for me. When I quote, fuck up, or when I make a mistake, it's very self-deprecating. I'm sure you felt this, Mar, like, you know, for example, surfing. I go to surfing a lot with you because I'm living vicariously through you in the ocean. I miss, shout out to San Diego, I miss surfing so bad. When you miss a wave, the worst thing you could ever do is be like, damn it, I missed the wave, I fucked up, I made a mistake. No, you just take a breath and be like, cool, let me find the peak, let me understand, let me use this as a learning lesson as to where I can find the right tide or the right position. Or, I mean, I'm sure you've experienced this out in the ocean.
Many, many times. And it's funny because sometimes you try to blame the ocean for doing something, but you cannot blame nature for being
you try to blame
a certain
the ocean.
Way. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not going to win if you blame the ocean. Mm. The ocean's always going to win. Mother Nature is incredibly powerful.
Yeah.
All right. So we talked about those two. Are there any other ones that come up for you, Mar? Because the conscious use of language, Ian mentioned the word shaman. I actually agree in certain situations. I think that going back to what I said in the beginning, what is etymology? It is the understanding of how words change and also the meaning of where they came from. It's twofold. It's both of them. So if we're really committed to conscious use of language, we have to understand the etymology of what language is. It's our adaptability to what words mean now compared to what they used to mean. I think shaman used to be a very pure word. I know you spent a lot of time in Peru, so you were around a lot of shamans, Mar. But that word shaman has almost become commodified in a certain way. Do you agree?
Totally agree. I don't like that so many people just take that word and use it on something they believe is shaman or the meaning of shaman, while they've done maybe like a 3-year training to be a certain type of healer and they directly call themselves shaman. And it's like, if you actually look at the word and the meaning of it, it's like you're born shaman. You're not made shaman when you're 30, 40 years old. It's like that's something you're born with, born into a certain culture. Mm. So I totally get Ian in that sense.
So true. So freaking true. Yeah. Okay. So Ian, I hope that was really helpful. And I know, Ian, that probably a lot of that was what you and I went through in the training, but it is really good. So y'all need to check out Ian's Instagram. We'll link it in the show notes. He's a very skilled coach. He helps people move from A to B in a very authentic way. Let's go to the next question here. So our next question is from Melissa. I actually did, this is cool. I did the training with Melissa as well too, our NLP Master Prac training together. So let's see what Melissa has to say.
Hi, Josh. It's Melissa from Canada. I wanted to say thank you for the episode that you made with Carrie Michelle and for both sharing so openly in that episode about your experiences. After that time, having some time since then, I was wondering if you had any new learnings that you could share, kind of in general on relationships, and maybe even more specifically, anything that you could share from the perspective of someone that, for me, starting a new relationship. So I'm starting a new relationship. I'm formally divorced and I have a child, and he is formally divorced and also has a child. So we are working through what that looks like to bring two families together and all the struggles of past that we're trying to help each other heal through and move forward and build something. So what are your thoughts on that? Thanks so much, Josh.
Amazing. So I can speak from what I know, and I'm not going to speak from what I don't know. What I do know is that even the question that Melissa is asking shows that she has the pure intention to bring healing to this blended family. And that's really what we're talking about, right? It's actually twofold. Before we get to the blended family, let's talk about this. For all y'all that have been through divorce, divorce can feel like the most gut-wrenching, most insane, most growth-producing, by the way, if you approach it from a learning lesson mentality, that I think any man or woman could ever go through on planet Earth, really. I can't think of something more painful and more just abrupt to the nervous system and the heart and the mind. So before you even blend the families, you have to create the container to do so. But the container to do so actually starts with you, because as we've talked about so much more on these AMAs, it is really about awareness first with everything. It's about know thyself, written on the temple at the Apollo in Greek mythology. So if we understand that the container for anything of creativity, of connection, of a blended family, it starts with how are we, what is our intention inside of us, and how are we going to put that intention into the space, right? So the intention I would suggest for you would be go deep within yourself, have a specific practice of emotional inventory. You can listen to our AMAs, or by the way, you can just meditate and get clear from journaling. You don't have to do my EI2 process. I know that it works because I do it myself. We'll link that in the show notes as well. But identify in yourself, what is the core conflict that you learned about yourself in your previous marriage? And how can you speak authentically about the lessons that you learned from that core conflict with your current partner? That is the most radical place to practice emotional intelligence and to practice intimacy and heart opening, because at the end of the day, like, what are we really talking about here? If we want to be able to heal from divorce and start something new, then there has to be a clear vision of exactly what you want to create. And most importantly, any disconnectedness inside of you that doubts or doesn't believe, you can create that vision. Now, we're not supposed to be alone when we're healing. We're not supposed to be alone, nor are we designed to be alone when we're going on the path of liberation. That's why we have a liberated life tribe. We're not meant to do it alone. On an emotional level, on a spiritual level, and also on a physiological level, we are built for tribe. We're wired for tribe. So I would say to your current partner, this is what I've noticed in my past relationship that didn't work. Here's what I'd love to create with you. You know, can we give him a pre-frame, like, hey, darling, I'd love to chat with you this weekend over coffee, or I've been thinking about how we can blend these families together. I know I can't control my ex, because you can't. I know I can't control the behavior of the person I used to be with, but I can control the way that I show up to the situation, and I can control our connection and how much you and I love each other and we trust each other. That's all we can do as the loving ingredient to this blended family. That's all we can really do. So I would get clear on that first. Have the conversation with your partner and just say, hey, can we have a weekly or a bi-weekly check-in of exactly how we're doing in co-creating this reality together? Because that's really what a union is, right? One of the things that was off track with Carrie and I for so long is we just had completely different realities. And we talked about this with Margot, who is really just a beautiful soul, who led us through many months of counseling to lead on to a medicine ceremony with Sassafras that actually allowed us to see things in a different way. And then now still in the process of integrating the different way. What became clear to me with Carrie Michelle is that I had a lot of hypervigilance and I had a lot of fear of abandonment that I was projecting onto her. She also had a fear of abandonment and did not feel safe around men because of her life that she's been with. And with respect, I can share this because she's already shared it publicly. Her stepdad was very abusive. Her brother was very physically abusive. There was porous boundaries with her mother and just certain things that, you know, to no fault of these people's own, they just simply did not know what they did not know. And we all do this, Mar. I'm sure you felt this. We all show up to relationship with bags. Mm-hmm. And anybody that says they don't is full of shit, capital S. Anybody that says they don't have issues, they haven't opened the book. So we all show up with them, right? So the core difference between creating intimacy and long-lastingness is my commitment and my just absolute dedication to creating a shared vision. Creating a shared vision, like really feel that in your heart right now. Create the shared vision of exactly what you want in a union, in a relationship, in a blended family, and get super crystal clear on what that vision is. And then do the work to build the scaffolding around that vision. And it might look like having a weekly check-in. It might look like doing retreats together once a quarter. It might look like just daily check-ins. I mean, there's many ways that it could look, but getting super, super clear on exactly what you want to create is where I would say 80%, 90% of people, myself included, were never taught. We just weren't taught. Our parents didn't know how to do it. Our grandparents didn't know how to do it. Maybe if you're in like the 5 to 1% of parents or grandparents that were conscious, you taught your kids how to do that. But for the rest of us that have been floating around on this rock in the middle of outer space, we were not taught. So give everyone grace that came before you. Give yourself grace. have this actual systematized, right, framework, some type of a framework to check in with your partner. Then after all that, and I'm not trying to make this complicated, I promise, but human relationships are complicated, right? They're the most challenging thing on planet Earth, I believe, human relationships. Then take that framework and apply it towards the blended family. Actually open your heart to your ex. You never know. He might be open to it because he wants peace too. I think we all want peace on a certain level. It's just the stories that we create block us from having that peace. And that peace can only come from a place that you've done the work to earn. And then, of course, from peace has power, which we know. Not just something that I've regurgitated from learning and many other people have, but, you know, Hawkins and the Tao and the Bible and almost all ancient texts, they all say the same thing. If you can find the middle way and you can be that middle way, you're going to have peace more often than not. It's when we get way outside of the middle way or way outside of the peaceful path, that's when shit goes haywire. We start believing the stories our ego is telling us, and then it's all about our partner. Always turn the mirror on yourself, then take that to the blended family. I wish I had more to say about blended families, Mark, because I don't necessarily know that. I don't know what it's like. I never had experience myself in a blended family. Did you, or do you know anybody in blended families?
Me neither. I've seen some people, and there's always a little bit of tension because you're bringing two different worlds together, but you can make it work. Like, everything is possible. Yeah. So it's just, as you said, finding the middle way to join those two worlds into one.
Yeah, you're so right. And look, you, like I said earlier, and then we'll round out for our last question today. It is so important to recognize that you cannot control your ex's behavior. It's okay to feel angry about their behavior. It's okay to be frustrated about their behavior. But if you start to become too attached to you controlling how they show up, or to you having an expectation that they match your shared vision with your current partner, you are always going to end up in tears, in frustration, in anger, and shame and blame. Get out of that rut. Pull yourself up. This is where maturity comes from. This is where spiritual maturity comes from, is by identifying what you can control and what you cannot control. It's in the Lord's Prayer. I'm not a religious man, right? But in the Lord's Prayer, it really touches upon this fact of, like, you know, grant me the serenity to accept what I can change and what I cannot. Please, God, grant me the serenity, that word serenity, that peace. If you want peace and serenity, the real spiritual work is identifying from a mature place what you can control, what you cannot control. I think that's really the crux of what we're talking about here today. It's your daily reminder to take your daily symbiotic from Seed, the hands-down highest quality gut health support supplement I've found in over 20 years in wellness. With rigorous evidence-based science, it's the most complete formula I believe exists in the entire microbiome world. Look, it's true that our health is not just what we eat, it's what we absorb. Current research shows that upwards of almost 90% of people in the world have some form of leaky gut. So it's definitely most likely you and I. The Seed DSO1 that I personally take every single morning supports a myriad of scientific terms that I don't even know how to pronounce really, but I know that Seed supports digestive health, gut barrier integrity, gut immune function, and so much more. And our friends over at Seed gave you and I 25% off our first purchase. Just head over to joshtrent.com/seed and use the code in all caps, 25joshtrent. That's joshtrent.com/seed and use the code 25joshtrent in all caps to get 25% off your first order. All right, let's move on to the last question. It is from Archer. I met Archer here in Austin. And by the way, y'all, all your questions can be dropped at joshtrent.com/AMA. So 90 seconds or less. It's so easy. And if you've been wanting to just get to a place different that you haven't been in a long time, or just some different thoughts or different feedback, or you want to pose a question because you're interested in the evolution of humanity, like, it doesn't have to be deep. It can be deep because I like it deep. That's my preference. joshtrent.com/AMA. Okay, let's hear from Archer.
Hello, Josh and the Wellness and Wisdom team. Thank you all so much for what you do. I've got a question for the AMA. In your opinion, what are the top three things that men can do to improve and sustain their relationships and marriages with their women, and even outside of providing and provision? So yeah, what are the top three things men can do to create harmonious, long-lasting, beautiful relationships and marriages?
Mm. So good. Before I answer this, Mar, what do you think women want from their men?
That's the million-dollar question. What do women want? I think most women don't even know what they want. I think that's the main issue. So I think a lot of us, and this is based off of Alison Armstrong's work, The Queen's Code, a lot of women just expect to have another woman, somebody who shows up as their bestie, right? As another woman. And when they meet a man, they don't realize that men work and act completely differently than women. And this was a really wake-up call for me. So Alison Armstrong's Queen's Code, it really opened my eyes. And I really recommend all the women to listen to it because, oh my God, it's life-changing.
Were you a frog farmer?
Yes. A big time frog farmer.
y'all get to. See, I just caught myself, right? You don't need to listen to the episode because nothing I say you ever have to do. We're just here to present information, a different way of thinking, and you make the conscious choice based on your level of development. Isn't that awesome? There's no pressure. Now, that authentic use of language, to go back to Ian's first question, I don't think you have to. I think you get to. You get to understand this concept of, are you a frog farmer or not? That'll really help the women that want to connect with their men on a deeper level. And by the way, for men, it's a great read as well. We've done two episodes with Alison Armstrong on the podcast. They're linked in this AMA, wherever you're listening. And what I could say to start is, and you touched on it, Mar, it's first and foremost, how do you create long-lasting connection with your wife, with your girlfriend as a man? First and foremost, you honor our sacred differences. Now, what do I mean by this? A woman is a woman because not just for the fact she has different chromosomes than a man. That's a biological difference, which, by the way, plays out and shows up in many emotional and mental constructs as well. So first and foremost, if you're the kind of person that doesn't believe that there's a gender, you should probably not listen to this podcast, nor ever join our community, because we believe in honoring the aspects of nature. So that's first and foremost. There is no such thing as a genderless society. There is a society where we honor our sacred differences, both biologically, emotionally, spiritually, mentally, physically, everything. Because here's what happens, like you said, Mar, when a woman gets into a relationship with a man and she's frog farming, and which I love that term. It's such a fun term. Allison's so good at what she does. I mean, like multiple decades in just helping women understand men. So y'all get to check out that episode. When a man gets into a relationship, he is not a woman. He is not just a hairy woman. He is a man. And so being secure in your masculinity, doing your inner work as a man to understand your own femininity, and this is a total flip on the construct here. In our logo, there is an upside down triangle. It is because that is the symbol for water. I've talked about this many times, but it's still my lesson to learn. And that's why I'm being honest about it. I am still in the process of mastering and understanding my own feminine energy. Feminine energy is the greatest gift to the world. So is masculine energy. But unless we treat them both with sacred respect, we're never going to get along. There's always going to be friction, and there's always going to be disconnect, and there's always going to be some type of intrusion into the boundaries that exist in relationship, because first and foremost, there's no boundary set. So set the boundary of honoring our sacred differences. Understand that as a man, you are going to get to hold space for your woman many, many times, more times than you would ever imagine that you thought you ever would. Now, what does this even mean, holding space? This is kind of a tricky term. You've heard this term, right, Mar? Holding space?
Yeah, I'm reading a beautiful book that's called The Art of Holding Space. So I'm learning all about that.
So how would you define holding space? What does that mean to you?
It's being there for somebody in a way that you can use your discernment instead of judgment, being there to support the weight of their emotions and their mental state, and yeah, just showing up with love instead of anything else, basically. I think that's how I would sum it up.
It's a great summary. And the only thing I would add to that would be, when you've done the work to be able to bring love into a situation, which includes emotional regulation, breath work, mindfulness practice, being present is an ultimate practice, right? And that's essentially what I have learned in relationship that women really crave the most. The best thing you can do to create longevity in a relationship is to be fully present. To be fully present means you can hold unlimited space. But in order to hold unlimited space and be fully present, you have to do both the beast work and the spirit work, right? We're a human body inhabited by a soul, and that's life. That's really what we're experiencing here on planet Earth. And so there gets to be this maintenance and growth of both of them, the beast and the spirit. So I would say have a connection to a higher power first and foremost as a man. If you don't have a connection to a higher power, it's going to be really easy for you to be a negative Nancy, a negative person, a negative Benny, whatever. Like you're going to find that there are times in your life that are so challenging. I mean, life can be so unbearable at times. Life can be so unbearable to the point where you may not even think you'd make it to tomorrow. Like, how am I going to get through this day? Well, if you don't have a practice in place of breathing or regulation in some point, in some way, it's going to be, and I'm going to say this with full confidence, it's going to be impossible for you to hold space for your woman if you as a man do not have a practice of emotional regulation. Before you ever get into relationship, Mar, I wish somebody would have told me this. I'm saving you guys decades of pain right now. You have to. You get to listen to me. Like, if you just learn this one skill of emotional regulation and making things not about you, a powerful resource for this is Don Miguel Ruiz, The Four Agreements, right? One of those agreements is never take anything personally. Never take anything personally. Every man, every woman is on their own journey. They go through their own roller coaster of hell and heaven throughout their life. You never know when you're meeting someone if they're having the worst day of their life. You don't know what it's like in someone's mind until you've been there. You don't know what it's like to walk a mile in someone's shoes unless you've worn their shoes. Well, if we're able to honor our differences, then before we ever do that intention, we get to get really clear on how do we regulate ourselves when we find ourselves not wanting to honor our differences as a man to a woman. There's many times where I wish that Carrie Michelle would just like, speak to me like a robot. I've even said that to her time. Babe, what is it that you need? You know, just tell me what you need, right? Because I just want to
straight to the point.
Get to the solution. Mm. I want to get to the solution. But that is not what women want. Women do not want to get to the solution. Women crave presence. Women crave understanding. They want to be seen. They want to be heard. They want to be understood. That's it. So if you can look through the lens of compassion and love that you talked about earlier, Mar, bringing love to a moment, which by the way, is not just a reductionized thing. Just because it's simple doesn't mean it's easy. Like we can bring the concept that you brought forth of bringing love to a situation, but it's so freaking complex because what you're talking about is our epigenetic trauma, our past life trauma, our current life trauma, our projections, our stories, our evidence, all the things of the amalgamation of who we are is how we show up to our woman as a man in every moment. So I think that's where we start, Archer, is we honor our differences. You let her be a woman and you stop trying to make her a man. She's not going to communicate to you like a man. If she's going to do the work on her side to not be a frog farmer, you get to do the work on your side to not make your woman a man. Like, accept the beauty of the feminine that is constantly in motion and water, the upside down triangle. And also know, this is a big one for me, Mar, and I'm sure you felt this maybe in past relationships. Many times as men, we have been, almost all the time as men, we have been taught that our worth is our wealth. The only thing we have to contribute to society and to a woman's life is how many zeros are in our bank account. I mean, it couldn't be the most fucking bullshit, self-deprecating narrative, probably the biggest one I've ever heard. And I believed it for so long because I thought to myself, how is a woman going to be with me if I'm not a millionaire? How is a woman going to be with me if I can't get her all these things and buy her all these things? And I realized that was just me coming from a place of insecurity. The dark side of the patriarchy exists. And that dark side says, unless you are in complete domination and control financially, physically, of your space, your kingdom, your dynasty, and your woman, then you are not worthy. But it's complete bullshit. Your worth is not your wealth. Your worth is how you master your five sides of self. That's your worth. Yes, is financial intelligence and financial self part of that? Of course it is. As a man, we get to provide. I love providing. Like it almost makes me want to cry just thinking about it. Like I love providing. I love it. I'm so proud to call you a teammate and to compensate you and to support you in your endeavors. I'm so proud to support my family and my children. Like, that gives me strength. That gives me energy. That gives me emotion as a man to provide. I love it. Now, this is the kicker, Archer, and for me and for all men, I really want you all to feel this and hear this. If you choose to provide from a place of control, it will always take away your energy. If you provide for a woman, or if you provide because you think you might get something from it, or because you provide, it means that you get sex or you get blowjobs or you get whatever, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. And she's going to feel it on a subtle level. Have you ever been in a relationship, Mar, where you felt like financial control was a thing that you had to contest with? In other words, you felt the man's financial control that in a way compressed your spirit?
It was kind of the other way around. So he always was asking me for money, which made me feel like I was the provider. So like the roles turned completely. It was like all out of balance.
It was doomed. It was doomed from the beginning.
From the beginning.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting. So this is big. And it's a much deeper conversation. You know, in these AMAs, we're not giving medical advice. We're not giving psychological advice. We're just relating shared experiences based on wisdom, with the end goal of us being liberated from the stories we think we know, or maybe we don't know yet, are complete bullshit. What I will say is that there is some truth, a lot of truth in what you said, where you felt like it was flipped, where you were the provider. And what did that make you feel, that you were providing for him?
I felt like his mother. I think that was the main thing. And it's like, you cannot be attracted to somebody who you have to mother. So that's when it all started to go downhill. And it's just like, I was the one working full time, paying for his food and cleaning the house and cooking and doing everything while he was, doing nothing, enjoying life. So I was like, felt a lot of pressure and kind of hate towards him, because like, he got everything, I got nothing out of the relationship. So completely out of balance.
There's nothing that will breed resentment more than a man who doesn't provide. There's nothing that will be a resentment soup with a bottomless pit than a man who doesn't provide. So I know, Archer, in your question, you said that besides providing, what are the ways to create long-lasting relationships, right? And I promise y'all I'll round this out, but it's such a good question. It's like, oh my God, we could do an entire AMA episode on just this one question.
Maybe we should.
What you felt is real. I think we actually get to. So what you felt, Mar, and I think what Archer is really asking for is, what else besides money? But also with the truth that money is important. When a man cannot rest on a financial foundation of truth within himself, and when he cannot provide from that truthfulness, the woman is going to feel it. She's going to resent him. She's going to leave him. And by the way, rightly so. If I was a woman and I was having to support my man, now granted, things happen. People get sick, people get in accidents, but there's a shared plan of how he will provide again. And by the way, there's always ways to provide. There are people in wheelchairs. There are people with no arms and legs. You can always find a way. Everything's figure outable. But I would say, beyond this recognition that that is not only you, that is a part of you, Archer, to provide, there's so much peace in that. I just like feel it in my body right now. There's so much peace in knowing that as a man, your worth is not your wealth, and it is not just what you provide that is you. There is also your emotional intelligence, your emotional regulation, your understanding of your own feminine energy, your way to give and receive information. And a big one that we're not going to have time to go into today, but we've done so many episodes on this, and this is your ability to process emotions, your ability to somatically experience emotions and to feel things and to regulate yourself in those feelings, and also the different language and frameworks that we go over in the Liberated Life Tribe about what do you do when you're at the wall? What do you do when you don't know what to do, and who can you turn to, and what are the frameworks of language and thinking you can rely on and depend on? These are the things that we're practicing together in Tribe. The last thing I'll say is timeline therapy. It's a big one for me. Timeline therapy is just a simple practice, right? And I'm not here to give you NLP training, but I'll just give you a super high level. If you're in the car, do this later, pull over. If you're not in the car and you can do this right now, just do this right now. Everybody just close your eyes, take a big breath in through your nose, fill your belly. And just as a man, or as a woman, but I'll speak to the man because, Archer, you're a man. just feel into your heart and just continue your breath in circles right now. Inhale through your nose, exhale through your mouth. Watch your belly rise, watch your belly fall. And I want you to float up above, see yourself as a human, as a soul, float up above your life 30,000 feet in the sky. And I want you to go back and trust your unconscious mind. The first thing that comes up for you around hypervigilance, around fear, around worthiness, around anything at all that's not loving or that doesn't feel joy or expansive. And I want you to just go and float over the top of that event right now. Just be with that for a moment. Maybe it's childhood, maybe it's young adult, maybe it's something that happened a year ago. Float above that timeline and just look, hover above your event and look down at that event and ask yourself, all right, how can I hold both worlds in this moment? How can I see what has occurred? Because all events are neutral. How can I see what has occurred that's actually of service to me? And how can I be honest with myself about what I've made this event mean that I've been projecting onto friends, family, business, and my woman? Case in point, when I was super young, I'll never forget this. I was in the hallway and my dad was a very, not physically violent, but he was very verbally violent and very just demonstrative at times. And I remember, and you know, forgive me for saying this, but I have to say this to be in integrity. It's not to call you out, Dad. I love you. And you know, I give you peace wherever you are. But I was in the hallway and I was going to go out on the field that night for my senior 1998 senior captain meeting in the middle of the football field where my mom was going to be there. I was going to bring her a flower and my dad was going to, you know, run out with me from the goalposts. And I still feel the pain of it now, but I can still have compassion for him now because I've done the timeline work to float above that event. And I remember he had an argument with my mom on the phone. And he hung up the phone and he said, someone should slit her belly like a pig. And I remember when he said that, it cut so deeply in me. And I thought to myself at that time, I'm like, I don't think I ever want to have a father again. I don't ever want to have a father again. If somebody could say something that harmful about the woman that brought me into the world, the event that happened was neutral, right? Because it's based on his projections. It's based on his anger and his resentment toward my mom, which is a byproduct of his own life experience and his own consciousness development. I can see that now clearly because of this timeline therapy. When I float above that event and I see it for neutral, I can feel the pain and the emotion of it now, but I can also have compassion for him now. I can also have understanding for what stress he might have been feeling, for what insanity he might have been going through in himself. So instead of me projecting that authority figures are bad, or that anytime anybody is having anger, or anytime somebody says something hurtful to me, like my woman or like a friend, that I don't ever want to have a relationship with them again. What I can do is I can learn the lesson as I float above that space in my timeline. And I can say, all right, this person was in pain. They said something that hurt me deeply. Can I hold two worlds? Can I hold the world of my own pain? Can I hold the world of their pain? And that's the real deep work, Archer. To go to that space within yourself that may still hold emotion, it may still hold a charge, and to do as many timeline therapies. A great resource for this is Mandorla, right? Going to Mandorla and doing this work with Scott and with Joni in person, massive, massive work. We'll leave that link in the show notes. That's just one example for me that I can say I've really come to peace with. Coming to peace with something does not always mean that it has zero charge. Just because you come to peace with something doesn't mean you might not cry or doesn't mean you might not feel something. Like, I had to choke back tears right now just thinking about the intensity of that moment. And so having that understanding of your life is a series of events that are happening for you for your own spiritual growth, not as a spiritual bypass, not as a reason for you to not feel things, but as an honest inventory of how these events have happened and how you can use these events for learning instead of projecting them onto your woman or projecting them onto your friends. That is the most powerful, incredible work that we could ever do as men. The most important thing we can do as a man is have a regulation practice, an inventory practice, and an honoring of the fact that we are not just dependent on our worth being our wealth. So I hope y'all could feel that from my heart today, because it is so important that we just continue to commit we continue to commit to this understanding that we're an amalgamation of so many things. And on this path, there is not going to be moments that don't have pain. We are always going to have moments where we experience pain. So give yourself grace. Do the work from an authentic place. Keep your heart open. And if it closes, give yourself grace there too. We're just falling forward. We're just walking ourselves home here. Ram Dass said it. I'll say it again. We are literally walking each other home. There will be some point in your life, Archer, where you won't be able to hold your children. There will be a moment where you won't get to hold your children anymore, where you won't get to hold your wife anymore, where you won't get to make love anymore, where you won't get to eat an orange on a cliffside in the sunset. These moments will come. And so use that as a reminder that these moments you have right now are so precious. And when you make mistakes and when you get dysregulated, go back to that emotion you feel, allow yourself to feel the emotion, and just recognize that all of this stuff is fleeting. Every moment we have is fleeting. All the things that we build fucking castles on the seashore with, the houses, the cars, the providing, all this shit, it is all going to be washed away by the tide one day. All of it. All of it. So take that into your consideration as you move forward with your wife and create long-lasting intimacy from that place, that all of this is finite and that none of this has any meaning besides the meaning you attach to it. So yeah, that's real for me. That's real for us. That's real for all of us. It is so important that we take an honest float above our timeline and see things for how they actually are. So Mar, that was a good one today. Mm-hmm. I thought I was going to get out of here without crying, but I did cry, which is a good thing. Tears are good. I remember John F. Kennedy said once, you know, the cure for anything is salt water, the ocean or tears or exercise. And I think that there's truth in that. Get in a good sweat, have a good cry, maybe go to the ocean. Salt water is the cure. What did we miss today? We covered so much ground, Mar. We covered so much ground. What a myriad of emotions and concepts we covered. The power of language, how men can create long-lasting intimacy, how to heal from divorce to start anew. What did we not cover?
Well, it would be great to actually do a whole episode just on like each of the topics separately. I think that would be really awesome just to go really in-depth on each one of them.
I think so. Y'all, please leave your feedback and questions, joshtrent.com/AMA. Until we see you again on another AMA, this is Mara and I wishing you both love and wellness. We'll talk to you soon.
Doing the cold plunge and cold thermogenesis is fast becoming the number one way to increase your health and metabolism, which directly leads to weight loss. Let's hear from Ryan Dewey, the CEO and co-founder of Plunge, to learn more.
At this point, you've probably heard about cold plunging somewhere on the internet and wondering what all the hype is about. Well, here at Plunge, we like to take all the stress out of the problem by providing at-home cold plunge units that provide crystal clear cold water on demand. As opposed to lugging ice and getting that trough in place and dealing with dirty water, the Plunge provides it always in there ready for you. Cold plunge is one of the greatest ROI tools that's out there. 2 to 3 minutes every single day, and you get the increased dopamine levels, a more resilient immune system, a regulated nervous system, and ultimately just a more calm, peaceful outlook on life. We truly believe that when you take the plunge, you change your life. We'd love for you to check us out and see what the cold plunge is all about.
Save $150 off your brand new plunge, plus get free shipping right to your home by heading over to joshtrent.com/plunge. Use the code WellnessForce. This is hands down my top daily biohack for longevity, inner peace, and mitochondrial health. Don't miss out on this special limited time deal. Head over to joshtrent.com/plunge. Use the code WellnessForce. Save $150 off your brand new plunge and a super special deal of free shipping.